Okay, so let's welcome to SPED Talk. Today we have Emily Robinson with Texas Education Agency and Twala Lofton, who is the Sensory Network Deaf and Hard of Hearing Specialist or Lead. I'm not sure exactly what your title is, Twala.
It's Project Manager.
I was totally off on that one. Okay, Project Manager. And so we're excited to have him back with us again. And so we're going to just go ahead and get started.
Okay. Absolutely. Thanks for setting that up, Pam. And so for our guests today, why don't y'all tell us a little bit about the Texas Sensory Support Network, kind of the purpose, partnerships, accomplishments, things like that.
Well, my name is Twyla, and I'm the project manager for the Texas Sensory Support Network for the deaf and hard of hearing side. There is another piece to us, which is the VI or visual impairment side, and we kind of work together because we're sensory supports. Our responsibilities are to essentially support the state of Texas. We do projects that TEA has decided that are a need for the state, and we are given specific projects, we are given budgets for those, and then our job is to go out and meet those needs. We go and do training. We provide guidance. We create online classes and provide online guidance documents that TEA has requested that we do for the state, for deaf and hard of hearing students, for the teachers, for interpreters, or whoever needs them related to our deaf education students.
And Emily here, I want to add, my name, by the way, is Emily Robinson. I'm speaking through a sign language interpreter. I am Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program Manager at TEA, Texas Education Agency. Also, the State Director of Regional Day School for the Deaf. TEA sponsors Texas Sensory Network through a variety of activities that Twyla had just recently mentioned. We make sure we provide support and resources that are needed from the field, also from parents and families. We continue to be aware of their needs and try to accommodate as much as we can. It's very exciting times to really be involved with this particular project. Also understand the network also includes deaf and hard of hearing, also the visually impaired, and also deaf and visually impaired. We're more focused on just deaf and hard of hearing at the moment, and that's it.
So you both mentioned the Regional Day School Program for the Deaf. So could one of you explain exactly what are the Regional Day School Programs?
Sure. We have a total of 53 programs throughout the state of Texas. Some areas have multiple regions of day school programs. Other areas have like maybe just one that serves a wide area. For an example, like Houston has multiple programs serving the Houston area. But then we also have as far area of 15 regions, like region 15, like San Angelo, understand they may serve all, say, from Brownwood down to close to the border. And that's just one program that serves a large area. And so we also have a variety throughout the state of those programs. And the reason why we have the RPSDs is to provide a range of services from home districts for LEAs, where students need that additional support, for an example, self-contained classrooms taught by teachers for the deaf. Other students typically feel good and able to get into the mainstream classrooms with an interpreter. There's a wide range of those, what makes us be able to provide all that support for what their needs are. And as they grow up, their needs change as they get older through the school age. And so we are there to provide that support also to have resources for that, but also to support the families also, providing additional support to families, you know, maybe learning sign language, giving them resources, community networking, a variety of such programs. Of course, I grew up in a regional daycare program myself in Mesquite, Texas, which is near Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I'm a product of the regional day school program. So I like to say that because here I am. And Twyla, you want to add anything to that?
Just the only piece I wanted to add is that we also, in addition to the RDSPDs, we also have Texas School for the Deaf. And that's the school that a lot of people are like, oh, y'all are that. It's like, no, we're not. TSD is in Austin, and that is the state school where students can go and live on campus or come in as a day student or student attends during the day. But our job is to support everybody else in the state of Texas, those who either don't want to go to Texas School for the Deaf or send their child there and they want to stay home and they want to be served on their home campus or in their home region.
Right. And also, I want to throw in, you know, some numbers. We have approximately 5,000 students in the regional day care programs throughout the state, about only 600 at Texas School for the Deaf. So if you can envision, we have a lot of students, and we are also still finding more students who need to be served. So just put that in perspective.
I love that you took a minute to explain that kind of the differentiation in services that are available through, the regional day schools for the deaf versus the school for the deaf down in Austin. And the fact that really it's a continuum of services model. And I know for many years, I was the director of a special education co-op, also an SSA, similar to the RDSPDs. Of course, we were all inclusive with all services, special education, to our rural schools in Central Texas, but we also were members of an SSA for our regional day school for the deaf, and we could not have serviced our students, even though we might only have a handful of students that needed these services, some of whom would go to the regional day school for their classes and such, but others who were integrated into our classrooms in our small rural campuses because we had exceptional individuals come out from our RDSPDs and provide services in their inclusive settings. And so I love that you drew out the fact that this really is that continuum of services model and that it really expands the entire state of Texas. So thanks for sharing that. So I have a question. You know, from your perspective, what are some of the unique challenges facing students who are deaf or hard of hearing?
I'm going to let Emily respond to this first.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I think there's a lot of challenges that we do face, and day-to-day challenges also. Really, the biggest challenge that we see are accessibility, communication access. To explain what communication access is really just, it is completely different for each individual. Within itself, is it a challenge? Today, we probably need specific access today, but tomorrow may not. It really depends on situations. Situational issues. Also trying to find someone to bring in that actually fits that access is also a challenge. We have a variety of interpreters throughout the state who have different levels of skills as far as signing. We also have teachers, parents, friends, really everyone. The biggest key to addressing that challenge, to communicate with that individual and explain what I need right now, what my what I need to actually communicate with that person, and we able to work together. Work together is the key of the whole thing in communication. We can write back and forth. That's great, but that's not an assumption that I meet another deaf individual that they prefer to write back and forth because this one did. No, that's not a model. Specifically, me, it might work, but I may prefer to use my voice. I may prefer to use an interpreter and sign. It's just a wide variety. And I notice within myself that I do flip back and forth with my communication modes. Sometimes I speak for myself. Sometimes I don't feel like speaking. I feel like just signing. It really just depends. It's just the beauty of it all, really. But communication access would be the biggest issue or challenge. And it's not only that one day we'll be able to 100% satisfy that challenge just typically will just totally go away. It's not. As long as we have resources, technology, manpower, we are able to try to meet that need as much as we can. Twyla?
Sure. Yeah. The other things that I wanted to just kind of throw in there as well are the frustrations that our deaf children are facing each day. Sometimes they don't even know that it's a frustration because they don't know any better. Where Emily talked about our levels of interpreters, our students out in the regional day school programs don't necessarily know that there are levels, and they assume that what they have in their class is normal. And quite often that's not what it should be. We're working very hard across the state to get our interpreters certified at higher levels. And to help you understand that better, I mean, you just imagine somebody who's learning to speak Spanish and they can pass a basic test on speaking Spanish or communicating in Spanish. And then suddenly they are thrust in the role of the interpreter. You know some Spanish? Okay, why don't you come interpret this large meeting for us or whatever? And that is really not the ideal person to be interpreting that because they just don't have the language fluency that we would want. And so our deaf students, that's what they deal with pretty much all day, every day. And that's something that we're working really hard to try to remedy. And the same thing happens with some of the teachers as well, is their language fluency just isn't where we need it. And so we're trying to get there to get our kids greater access. But think just how hard you would have to work as that person who is utilizing somebody with a basic knowledge of the language, trying to interpret for you all day long, and you're still having to decode more and more of, okay, wait, I think this is what they mean. I don't really understand it because they're trying to teach me this. It's difficult, and our kids are doing this all day, every day. And so you can imagine the fatigue that would come with that, and our kids' eye fatigue. You know, I mean, as hearing people, we listen to stuff all day long, but we can shut our eyes in the middle of a presentation if we just need to take an eye break. We can shut our eyes and still be getting that information. Our deaf kids, the minute they close their eyes, that access is gone. So, you know, taking those breaks, that's a huge problem, I guess, not problem, but frustration as well. It's just that fatigue that happens with our kids too. So just some more things to think about.
Yes. I know there's been discussion about part of with the interpreters, school-based interpreters, is just the pay is not what it probably needs to be because they're more seen like paraprofessionals, which they're not. And so those who probably have those skills that you're talking about are probably in the private sector. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've recently done a report that we just printed or got the guidance document out showing interpreter pay scales for across the state. We worked with the governor's office on developing this document to help school districts see the huge discrepancy in pay when it comes to educational interpreters versus those who work in the community. Typically, as an educational interpreter, you're going to make about a third to a quarter of what an interpreter out in the agency is out in the community is going to make. So that's huge. So pulling in those interpreters that do have the better skills is very difficult. So we're having to work with districts to get that pay increased, to get interpreters relabeled and get them off of a para scale and onto a professional scale. So yeah, it's a big challenge.
And I think also to add to that, the elevated idea that an interpreter themselves are language models for our students. So now we want to explain that to HR or school districts to understand, hey, why this interpreter needs to be on that professional pay scale. Our students are continually frustrated and suffering from language deprivation, access to communication language. To elevate that role of the interpreter gives the students the ability to play catch up as much as they can, understanding that that's not the answer to our issue or problem, but it is part of it. And we want to make sure that the interpreters are paid to what they should be paid because of what the work they would provide, the access they provide. It's just phenomenal. Also, at the same time, we need to recognize them too.
So a couple of years ago, there was a change in the state from auditory impairment to deaf and hard of hearing. So one of you like to discuss the change and why?
But sure. I think that was 2018, I believe. Trying to remember that. 2018, I believe. And so far we have used the term, up until then we used the term auditory impairment, AI, which was more of a medical terminology for describing that individual that they have a hearing loss. And routinely doctors use that term, but understanding we're in the educational field, we're not worried or pay attention to the hearing loss or the medical issue of that. We're more about the culture, the education, the other stuff that's part of, the term. So it's more accepted to use the word deaf and hard of hearing, DHH. Now, deaf community will accept that as the term that describes them. And they do not envision themselves as an impairment or impaired or something that is broken. The reason why we don't see it that way is because we have the ability to communicate. We use sign language. We write back and forth, whatever the modality is. So yes, we have the ability to communicate, and it may not match to your communication mode or style. So that's where the challenge lies. And that's why we have to work together in bridging that gap. We try to redirect to a more culturally accepted terminology, which is deaf and hard of hearing, which a lot of our paperwork documents had to change from AI to deaf and hard of hearing. And it's a process.
I can imagine changing the paperwork. Not an easy task.
Oh, no.
So you mentioned the deaf community, and there's, I think our previous conversation, we talked a little bit about the deaf culture, because I had mentioned my daughter who signs at her church, and her name is Antoinette. And one of the young men who attended who's deaf and says, what's your deaf name? Has anybody given you a deaf sign? And she's like, no. And then she explained to me, only a deaf person can give her a name or a sign for her name. So could you just talk about that? I don't think most people really understand there is a deaf culture that's unique to people who are deaf. So Twyla or Emily, either one.
I'm always going to default to Emily because Emily is our deaf person here. So yeah. I'm going to default to her and then I can add more later.
Okay. I explained that I was raised and I was giving a sign name for myself by a hearing teacher who uses E on the cheek, on the right side, because I was so sweet. Later, I realized that that was not appropriate. She should have never given that to me by a teacher who is hearing. A hearing person, it was such a no-no, needs to be a deaf person. So my sign name has changed to Emily, which I fingerspell, 5 letters. If your name is less than 5 letters and it's easy to spell, typically that can be your sign name, which is this. And yes, deaf people give out your names. And it can be as simple as a letter, as we say in English, or it could be something completely often related to something, your personality, something that you did for fun, or a deaf person actually studies you and look and see what really fits you. So to be giving a signed name by a deaf individual is actually tremendous. It's really a gift. It's an honor. It's a gift. Deaf culture. Speaking of deaf culture, I can explain that I'm not really 100% in deaf culture. I didn't get into that until after I got into college. I grew up in a regional day care program, and I was more involved with hearing culture. So I didn't know that there was actually such thing as a deaf culture when I was growing up my school age. So we typically, you know, get together, we talk, maybe in the kitchen, something, you know, we're eating, we're grabbing food, and we're talking about the events. We can sit around and talk all night and not even realize the time has passed. My parents used to get on to me because I'd come home so late at night and say, what were you doing? Why you're out so late? And I thought, I was just with my friends. We were chatting. We didn't realize that time had passed. So, and they didn't understand it. And I tried to explain it to them and it just they didn't really get it. You have to live it to really understand it. You really do. The other thing that we typically do is like, bang on the table to get the attention. That's basically what it is. It's the vibration, really. It's not the banging on the table. It's the vibration that you feel that gets the attention. And the hearing people probably looks at us and go, oh my goodness. Oh, they're savages or barbarians. Oh my God, they're so wild. But that's just normal. And I've accepted that and I'm fine with that. If you want to call me that, so what? I used to have students that who could not pronounce my name. They couldn't say Robinson. They would yell it, Roe. And that was my name. That was what they called me, Roe. And I accepted that. It's okay. I mean, it was beautiful. And Twyla could probably share more from a hearing perspective of deaf culture than I can.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. The majority of my career was spent at Texas School for the Deaf. So my immersion in deaf culture was fabulous. I was, you know, a huge fan of the deaf community. I don't know how else to say it. I love being a part of the deaf community. And there are so many things that are just unique. The whole deaf circle that Emily was talking about, that's because there's a group of people and visually that's the most accessible. Everybody stands in a circle. So you can see everybody having this conversation. The idea of tapping somebody on the shoulder to get their attention. There's just different things that happen. When she was talking about banging on things, in old days, the schools were built with the wooden floors. So to get somebody's attention or the class's attention, they would stomp on the floor and the class would feel the vibration and turn and look. So there's all of those kinds of things. But yeah, people say that, oh, wow, your classroom must have been really quiet. And it's like, well, in one aspect, yes, but as far as a room noise or those kinds of things, no, because there's lots of pencil tapping. There's lots of just noises that, you know, they don't pay attention to it because they can't hear it. And I have to say it's an environment I love. I miss my classroom filled with all the deaf kids. You know, it's just, I love TSD. Another thing was, as a hearing person coming in and being labeled an ally is a really big thing in the deaf community. It's huge when somebody in the deaf community says, you are an ally. That's like, yeah, you know, I can't label myself an ally. I need somebody from the community to do it. Same thing with getting my name signed. My name sign, very similar to Emily's. It actually changed from a name sign that wasn't as culturally appropriate, even though a deaf person gave it to me. It used to be T and then an L on the arm. This is a sign for music. And so it used to be TL because I was an interpreter at church and I did a lot of signed music. When I went to work at Texas School for the Deaf, the more we talked and the more I learned about deaf culture, I realized a name sign based on something that's really for hearing people, it just didn't feel culturally appropriate to me. And so I asked my deaf coworkers to please change my name sign. And they decided to, just very similar to Emily's, to change mine to spelling it. So my name is Twyla, and you just spell Twyla because it's easy to spell, it's fast. And honestly, it's a little bit faster than actually signing the name. So there are so many nuances to deaf culture that it's fascinating.
So, you know, I think every human wants to connect to a community. It's a universal drive, I think. And so I think whether you're a hearing individual or someone who is deaf of hard of hearing, you're describing something just part of the human condition is what I would say. And so I think it's interesting that for maybe hearing people, we find it fascinating or unique that you have a culture of your own. But I mean, it really only makes perfect sense, right? We all are trying to fit in the world with people that we identify with. And so I think for me, I wonder, you know, do you have any specific advice for maybe a parent who's raising a child who's deaf of hard of hearing, or even the considerations of, do I put my child on bus to go across the county or the region to this day school for the deaf, or maybe send them to the Texas School for the Deaf in Austin, or, you know, making these kind of big decisions for any parent is difficult, and especially when there's communication and language barriers. So, you know, how, for a parent, how do you make that decision, and how do you know that what you're doing is the right decision? Because you want your children immersed in culture that helps them identify who they are as a unique individual. So I see the warrant and the benefit to maybe embracing these different settings. And at the same time, that fear of letting go and sending your child off and not quite knowing, you know, how to make those decisions. So any insight you would share on that?
Let Emily start.
Sure. Yes, it is a huge decision for a family to make that decision if they want to send their kid to regional day school program or to Texas School for the Deaf. Really, the big reward for their family is actually to learn how to sign. I understand every family feels uncomfortable because this is such a new language. It takes time to learn. I may not be as fluent as an interpreter. And that's not what the deaf or that deaf child wants. Wants you to be the expert or the fluent, most fluent signer. They want you to connect. That's the crux of the whole thing. You know, teaching communication between parents and child, how a deaf child's able to see love, how could they see all these different variety of things, mental health impact, if you had no communication happening in the home. It's tremendous, and it's, wow, it's awesome. And you know, and that impact lasts forever as adults. So the family needs to learn how to sign, communicate. There's so much resources. Regional day school programs offer sign classes for the families. Understanding it's not just the parents, but bring your grandparents, your siblings, your aunt and uncles, your friends. Bring them on. We need to connect with that deaf child. Also, it's not just signing class, but it's also, you know, there's apps on your phone, tablets that you can look at real quickly and pick up some. Practice. The more you practice, the more you communicate with your child, the more confident you become in the language. And of course, now, you know, I'm learning to sign. At the same time, my child needs specific services. My child is 3 years old. They're starting school all day, school all day. They can and should, because the language they're needed to have access. You know, I put my three-year-old on a bus that travels across the region, even if it's the next town or across the county or across the whole region or to Texas School for the Deaf in Austin. That is a huge sacrifice for a family to make. But at the end, there's a reward. That's a beautiful, tremendous reward. Your child has blossomed. But understanding the family still has that connection with your child because you sign. And that never disappears. That's why I always encourage to have that communication, start establishing that communication, and continue to learn. At the same time, send your child to whatever program you decide. And understand, every year, your child needs may change. So they may not have to go to Texas School for the Deaf. They may be able to come back to their home district or vice versa. So it's flexible, and be flexible. Work with your child. They'll let you know what their needs are and wants, and then you'll be able to communicate that, and that's the beautiful part of it.
Yeah, I wanted to add a little bit here that some of the nice things that we have in the state of Texas is there are programs out there, one of them being called Guide by Your Side. And what that is a program where a parent gets connected with another parent who has gone through this experience. Because imagine, you know, you're expecting a baby that is just like you, a baby that hears. And suddenly you have a baby that is not like you because the baby doesn't hear. So what, you know, those parents are going through, they're going to go through a grieving process. They're going to, you know, have all of these emotions that they don't understand, and they need somebody else who does understand it. So Guide by Your Side is a wonderful program that just connects those parents with other people. My thing is, I'm going to say, find deaf people. You've likely, as a hearing person, may never have met a deaf person before. So I'm going to say, let's find deaf people. Let's learn about their experiences and what worked for them, what didn't work for them. And, you know, look for the best experience for your child. It's got to be hard as a hearing person. And then to learn, okay, so your child is deaf. And then to learn about this whole deaf culture thing, you know, that they talk about. It's like, wait a minute, how many of us have ever experienced being or having a different culture than my child? That's quite a unique experience. It's like, as a hearing person, I'm not, you know, deaf culture is not mine, but it is my child's. So that too is a very unique thing that happens in the deaf community, in the hearing community, and those who have deaf children. The other thing to keep in mind is the one thing I love that Emily emphasized is that teaching your child design and you learning design. We offer a wide range of services from a child being oral, which is where they're not using sign language, or they're completely using sign language as their method of communication. We have to provide services from one end of the continuum to the other. But the thing that I like to emphasize is that research proves, even if you choose that you want your child to be oral, you want to use that sign language, it's proven in research that sign language does not inhibit the opportunities as an oral student. It's not going to stop them from learning some speech reading. It's not going to stop them from learning any of that. You're giving them more. So instead of limiting yourself to only oralism, add sign language in there so you have options, because there's never a guarantee that one is going to work for sure over the other. So why would we not give our kids access to everything? And then, that provides them a greater choice as they progress in their life. So I tend to steer towards, let's not say, oh, I want to only put a cochlear implant or hearing aids or whatever and go the oral route. It's like, you can go the oral route. That's parent choice completely. But let's give them more. Let's give our child everything that we can. And that's going to include sign language as well.
And my parents gave me everything. I had the ability to hear with hearing aids. Not perfect, no, but I had enough residual hearing to be able to learn how to speak. So, but that's not something that you can look on audiogram and say, oh yeah, hey, you have enough residual hearing. You got enough hear that you're able to learn how to speak, just fine and clearly. No, you can't do that. It's more of an internal thing of the individual. It's also self-motivation, resources that were given. I did 16 years of speech therapy, 16 years. So, and I had the ability to speak, but at the same time, my parents decided to also make sure that I had signing access, and I had both. So really, that was really nice. So now I'm able to, like Twyla mentioned, I can pick the whole range of what I fit into at that moment. And that's the beautiful part of it. But I understand not every deaf person has that opportunity, and that's okay. That really is okay. It really is. As long as they have access, that's the beautiful part of it. Just have access. And I also want to put something out or mention one more thing. Hearing aids, cochlear implant, does it matter? It's the language access that's really most important. We need to focus on that.
Okay. So speaking of language, one thing I would just kind of throw out is, because I worked on secondary, and the issue of self-advocacy, that listening to you, Emily, is that you are able to advocate, you are able to navigate based on what it is your preferences for is for its communication, be it sign or speaking, but you've made, you made that choice. You can make that choice. But when we're looking at some of our students who are not, I don't know if they don't have the self-advocating skills that are needed to get what they need or to express what they need. And so if you were speaking to a student transition age, 14-year-old, or even younger, what would you say to that student about advocating for what they're needing, or even helping them understand what they might need, even though they might not know what they need? How about that?
Well, it goes back to the incidental learning, IL. We have to purposely teach everything. It's natural for hearing people to be able to pick up incidental learning and store that knowledge and know that information for later. Deaf children like myself, we have to be constantly eyes wide to intention and have to be intentionally taught. We do have a course called Navigational Life for students who are deaf and hard of hearing that could be taught at the high school level for credit. That course is, has a whole range of speaking about self, self-assessing, who am I, reading my own audiogram, what does that mean for me, learning different ways to advocate for yourself, understanding, yes, today I need this, doesn't mean I need that tomorrow, how to explain that. That course really goes in depth, giving the tools to the students when they leave high school and go to the workforce or college, university, they have the best understanding how to advocate for themselves. And they have more confidence, self-esteem, and knowing that, yes, you will face frustrations and barriers, but you have the resources as far as how to explain, how to say, hey, no, this is what I need. No, this is not going to work for me, for an example. In the medical field, we see a lot of video remote interpreting, VRI, and it's an interpreter on a screen, typically on an iPad that's sitting there, and I have to sign to the iPad. In a medical situation, that doesn't really work. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. Recently, I went to the doctor's appointment for my daughter. We had the VRI, and of course, I rolled my eyes, but okay, I wanted to explain to the physician saying, hey, this really not effective communication, and I need you to see it, and I'm going to advocate for myself to say I'm going to accept this VRI for today, for now. And we went through the appointment. The doctor made some comments about telling the daughter what she needed to do, and the interpreter was like, huh? Didn't understand what was going on. So I, as a deaf person, had to explain to the interpreter what was going on because the interpreter couldn't see the whole room, what was going on. They only could see me where the screen was pointed. So the doctor goes, oh, finally got it. Now he gets it. It's better to have an on-site, a live interpreter in the room. Yes. So you have to pick your battles. And that course will actually help the student to understand and learn those tools and how to pick their battles and advocate for themselves.
Yeah, and the only thing I want to throw in there is just Emily talking about the incidental learning and how we as hearing people and our kids depend a lot on just the environment, things around us that we hear. But as a deaf ed teacher, I have to explicitly teach all of the things that our kids that are hearing just naturally acquire because they heard it in their environment. They heard it in the TV in the background. You know, all of those things I have to think of, oh, wow, okay, my student wasn't able to access that just hearing it incidentally. I have to explicitly teach this.
Yes.
Okay. So I know there's a website. The Sensory Network has a website, so you would like to give out your website address?
Violet? Sure, sure. It's txssn.org. It's just Texas Sensory Support Network, so txssn.
This has been really a good conversation. We went down a road, I wasn't sure where we were going to go today, but I'm happy we went there. Is there anything you all like to share that we haven't asked that you would want people to know?
I'm going to go first this time because I want us to end with Emily.
So
the thing that I would say is learn as much as you possibly can about deaf culture, about deaf kids, about what it means to be a deaf person and the educational opportunities or lack of opportunities for our deaf kids. And just advocate as much as you can. Anytime you hear about a student who is deaf or hard of hearing, help make those kids know that there are so many opportunities out there. They can learn, they can do anything that our hearing kids can do. I just advocate for our deaf and hard of hearing kids. Emily.
Yes. One thing I definitely wanted to mention that is when you're born, you have your deaf baby, just know that you will have a rewarding journey with your child. The journey itself will be beautiful. Yes. Yes, you're going to have frustrations. Yes, you're going to have huge barriers. But oh my, what a beautiful ending. You will learn a new language. You will learn different ways to connect with your child that typically doesn't happen with a hearing and hearing child. Be sure to take time to understand the culture, understand language, ask all the questions. We're here to help. We want to help because we know, looking into the future, your child is able to do anything. Look at today's world. You have deaf people in theater, in movie stars, deaf people who are doctors, scientists, police officers. In the past, in the old days, we were told we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't. Today, we are changing that. Why? We're becoming more accessible. We now are understanding, we're really understanding this is what they really need. Oh, yes, you can do that job. We can make that accommodation and make it fit. It's the idea of your child saying, I want to be a lifeguard. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they can. Encourage that. Encourage them. Advocate. You have to explain. You may have to educate. You may have to reach out and contact some folks, but make it happen, please. We, the deaf community, need your help, and we want to encourage and make them as successful as possible because it is possible.
I just want to say thank each of you, Emily, Twyla, and Roger, also for your service today. Just a great conversation, very insightful. And I think, you know, this is going to be a wonderful episode for our followers. And, you know, at Sped Talk, we love to showcase these kind of resources and stories. And I think we need maybe to pivot off and maybe not just call ourselves Sped Talk, but Sped Sign